Hey, all Scott Horton here. I want to tell you about this great new book, Livin' La Vida Baroca, American Culture in an Age of Imperial Orthodoxies by Thomas Harrington. While he comes from the left, Harrington has little time for much of what is passed off under that label today. Like us libertarians, he puts peace and freedom first. The book's got great essays on American fascism, empire, the Israeli occupation, the left and Obama, liberalism in the state, and some interesting lessons from the history of Imperial Spain. Livin' La Vida Baroca by Thomas Harrington. Check it out at scotthorton.org/books or scotthorton.org/Amazon. All right, you guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, the Scott Horton Show. Online, I got Eric Garris. He's the founder and managing director of antiwar.com. Write about everything for 19 years and counting now. Welcome back to the show. Eric, how are you doing?
Great. How are you doing, Scott?
Thanks. I'm doing pretty good. Well, so the president declared war again. He keeps doing this every couple of weeks. He announces we're going to war with Iraq again, everybody. Okay. But now, so I guess last night supposedly was the big one. What do we learn any different than what we already knew about what America's doing over there?
Well, we didn't really learn anything from Obama's speech. It was, he had a lot of wiggle room, and he's basically asking for or declaring that he has the right to do whatever he wants in Iraq, Syria, and anywhere else that he sees ISIS.
Mm-hmm. So, was he, it's interesting, I don't know if this has been made clear in the journalism yet, was he referring back to the original AUMF after September 11th at that point? Or he's just saying, I don't need any authorization to use force, I can kill anybody that I say is a terrorist, or what?
Well, maybe I missed it, but I didn't really hear any legal justification for how he's declaring that he has this power, other than it is to protect America.
Right, yeah. Sounds like he's just saying he has that authority. He doesn't need any other authority at all, even the one passed after September 11th with all the... They've rewritten it to include associated forces and all this other stuff, but I guess he's not even invoking that, just like Dick Cheney exactly 13 years ago. He's decided the unitary executive is all. Not too big of a surprise, I guess.
Well, and regarding Syria specifically, he did not announce what he's going to do, but he essentially saying he reserves the right to go into Syria and do whatever he wants without anybody's consent.
Well, now, what's Congress saying about that? Is there much pushback at all?
Well, I've heard a little bit. There are several members of Congress who are demanding that Congress be consulted at the very least. Unfortunately, people are ignoring what the Constitution says, which is that Congress has the power to declare war, and nobody is asking for a declaration of war other than some of the more constitutionalist fringe of Congress.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. At best, it'll be an authorization if they even vote on it. But at least
what he's proposing is to ask permission to arm the Syria rebels, which he's already been doing for quite a while now. And if he gets that, assuming that they just give it to him as he asks for, he's then going to use that as a slippery slope to support the Syria rebels with airstrikes to help them use those weapons. But keep in mind that when he says the Syria rebels, as I know you've been talking about already on the show, he is talking about people who are an ISIS-like.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Patrick Coburn has said on this show, and it's in his new book, too, that when he goes and talks with the FSA guys, there's no difference between them, al-Nusra, and ISIS, other than maybe these guys have decided they don't mind cozying up to America for some money and weapons a little bit more. But otherwise, they all have the exact same agenda. The only differences between them are, who's who gets to call the shots and who has to follow the orders.
Right. They have some minor strategical and tactical differences, but their ideologies are very similar. The Free Syrian Army, one of their factions is the group that sold Sotloff to ISIS.
Right. Yeah, and of course, you know, the Farouk Brigade, I don't know if they're even around anymore, but they had been cited for a long time as being one of the moderate groups because they were for elections. and for, you know, some kind of, some form of secularism. And, you know, they fell short of calling for the complete annihilation of everybody who's not Sunni Arab in Syria, which has been the ISIS and al-Nusra, you know, tactic, basically. But then, so, oh, good, they're moderate and secular and won elections. But it was their commander was the cannibal eating the dead soldier's heart on video that went viral around the world. These are our moderates.
Right, like, and Obama, a few weeks ago, in his interview with Thomas Friedman in the New York Times, said that the idea of finding moderate rebels to arm in Syria was a fantasy. Yet, almost the very next day, he called for more arms to them. And I don't understand exactly what he thinks he is going to do. He's going to be arming ISIS and bombing them at the same time.
Yeah, it's really crazy. And I understand that he's in a weird predicament where here he's been guilty of high treason for 3 years straight now, directly, well, barely indirectly. I say, you know, it's a gray area, but pretty much directly supporting this Mujahideen war against Assad this whole time. And now he's got a pivot. And so now it's just a question of language, right? He needs every O'Brien in the entire Ministry of Truth to try to figure out a way to spin the pivot back to Assad, or at least against the rebels he's been supporting all along, and he doesn't quite know how to do it. I mean,
right,
if he was going to be honest at all, he would just say, all right, fine, we're going to do like Bill Clinton and George W. Bush, and we're going to pay Assad to kill these guys and to reestablish his army's monopoly on force in the land known as Syria. But that's not the policy, and apparently it can't be.
Well, not only that, okay, taking a step back, not as a non-interventionist, but just looking at what he is trying to do, mm-hmm. he should, from his point of view, make up with Assad. Assad really has no problems with the U.S. Assad participated in rendition and torture with the United States for 15 years, and he would be perfectly happy to join up with the U.S. to fight against ISIS. But the only thing holding Obama back there is Israel's insistence that we have to be for regime change in Syria.
Right, absolutely. Although, you know, at this point now, I mean, really, if they had just stayed out of the war altogether in 2011 and 12, Assad would have been finished winning by then. It would have all been over. But, you know, I took it real seriously when I saw Michael Scheuer on TV. And for those not familiar, Michael Scheuer, former chief of the CIA's Bin Laden unit, no love for Israel and their policy against Assad whatsoever. He would be, all things being equal, he would be all for having Assad kill each and every last one of these guys and anybody nearby him. Anybody who's ever heard Scheuer talk about this kind of stuff knows that. And yet he told Fox News, Lou Dobbs on Fox News, he said, we know we should not back Assad now because that just reinforces the entire narrative of our enemies, that we are on the side of the Iranian Shia and their proxies. They're trying to make this a massive regional sectarian civil war. We've already really made it that way with our invasion of Iraq back in 2003, and to side with the Shia now is just as counterproductive as you know, just going in there and carpet bombing them.
Well, this is what's crazy, because the analysts, his own people, are telling him the truth about what's going on in Syria, and then they ignore that and turn around and they pretend that they can arm some group, some non-existent group of people that have the ability to win in Syria and who are not Islamists and who are not Assad. They don't exist. There is nobody like that in Syria. Syria has over 1,500 different Islamist groups. And the only fight, if Assad goes, the only fighting that's going to be going on is between these 1,500, among these 1,500 groups.
Yep. Well, now, and you know, Roy Gutman from McClatchy, he did a report last week about how he talked with all the FSA leaders, the Free Syrian Army. They're not moderates, but those are the American-backed guys. And how they've been completely cut out of the loop. And the CIA is now directly working with the FSA groups on the ground, which are these, again, tiny little militia groups. And there are, you know, whatever, a dozen or so working directly for the CIA, but that amounts to nothing. As Landay says, they amount to basically the border guards keeping these guys out of Jordan and Israel. We'll be right back with Eric Garrison, just a sec. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers? Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. It's libertarian foreign policy, mostly. Talking with Eric Garris, founder and director of antiwar.com. And we're talking about Obama's big speech last night and the announcement of the same damn policy here of, seemingly just making matters worse and worse. I wonder about, Eric, when you think about the last Iraq war, which was fought de facto for Iran in the sense of putting their favored groups among the Shiite majority in power in Baghdad and kicking all the Sunnis out of Baghdad for them at power drill point and all of that. In this case, because we don't have all the Army and Marine Corps on the ground, the Iranians can't use our Army and Marine Corps on the ground. So instead, it's their guys on the ground. The Quds Force is already there leading and helped with the America and Iran really work together with the so-called liberation of that town in Milri, or however you say it there, where the Turkmen were. And it seems like, just like in Schroeder's warning about Syria there, that by really doing anything here at all, we are outright allying with Iran in such a way as to really probably energize many, many more people to ISIS's cause. And of course, you and me and antiwar.com and everything, we're 100% good on the getting along with Iran issue, but that doesn't mean we want to have a military alliance with them, and especially when it's a revolutionary Shiite government that rules the country, a theocracy that rules the country. It's not like they're just the Shiites next door. They are a Shiite government, revolutionary movement in charge over there. And we are outright more than ever allying with them against the Sunnis of Iraq. And that to me just seems like a recipe for total catastrophe here. There's no one good to ally with.
Well, that's true. Congressman Jim Moran said last night after the speech that Obama is turning us into the Shiite Air Force, and that is just going to make Sunnis more and more angry with us. And it's not just a question of building ISIS. It's also a question of uniting the other Sunni tribes and the Sunni militias with ISIS to fight against us and the Shiites and just create a much worse situation. I wanted to mention Libya, because Libya is a really good example of what is going to happen to Syria, although Syria is going to be much worse if Assad falls. In Libya now, you have essentially three countries developing. You have two different governments, both of them elected in the West, that are competing with each other. And then you have a more extreme al-Qaeda-type Islamist group controlling the East in Benghazi. And then you have this General Hifter, who has clearly been a CIA asset for many, many years. He lived in D.C. for 20 years. He's got the Libyan Air Force, and he is bombing the more radical Islamists. But what he wants, neither of the governments really want him, because what he wants is the military coup. We left Libya in a situation where it's worse than a failed state.
Yeah, it's just tearing itself apart. And, of course, it's another one of these fake countries that was being held together by the dictator. But, of course, what was his only virtue, really, Gaddafi, was killing al-Qaeda guys, keeping them at least from doing exactly what Obama helped them do. And, you know, this has actually always been puzzling to me, because if you remember back when we talked in 2011 about this, I was always scaremongering about how this means we are going to have to occupy Libya, and we're going to have to create a new democracy, we're going to have to train up their army, we're going to hold purple-fingered elections, which they actually did the purple-fingered elections, but this is going to be another break it, you own it kind of thing, because once they overthrow Gaddafi, there will be nothing left of his state, which hardly existed at all in the first place. It was just him and his Gestapo. So once we got rid of it, then what? And so I just assumed that it'll mean total occupation. But apparently the plan was no plan, right? I mean, in Iraq, they occupied the place with no real plan about what the hell they were trying to do. In Libya, they got rid of Gaddafi. We came, we saw, he died, ha ha ha. And then it was like it didn't exist. And I'm not complaining that they didn't invade the place, but it's kind of strange to me. It was like they never had another meeting about Libya in the White House again after that or something. I don't know how they decided to do that or how they decided to just let it be.
Well, and they seem to have the same plan for Syria. I mean, they do not. Nation building in Syria would be would make Libya look like a cakewalk. There's no way that with Assad gone, that we are going to be able to do anything but bomb various factions and arm various factions, which are just going to turn it more and more into a chaotic situation.
Right, which is the same thing that we've been saying about Syria since Libya, which is, hey, in Libya, at least it's a pretty simple east-to-west direction, sparsely populated territory, special forces on the ground, NATO in the air. You help these guys sack that city, and you're done. And so it'll happen eventually. It took them 9 months to do it, but we never doubted that. Eventually, they'll sack Tripoli. But in Syria, from 2011 on, we said it's going to be an entirely different process there. Yeah, way more complicated situation. You don't have the simple geographic move from one side of the country to the other kind of a situation at all. And they're not going to be able to put a bunch of special forces on the ground and NATO planes in the air because Assad has Russian air defenses. And so they can't do, you know, the no-fly zone trick and all of that. You know, they were basically embarking on the same policy, only without any of the things that made Libya doable, even in that narrow sense, you know?
Right. Well, we have what's happening now. We are looking at a sea change for the Middle East. We're not just talking about changing borders. The whole idea of what makes up a country in the Middle East is going to be thrown out the window. We are turning it back pre-World War I into warring tribes and empires. And it's going to be insane. It's going to be, we're not even going to be able to predict what the results of what we're doing are. We're probably going to see is a World War III, not necessarily a nuclear World War III, but an extremely chaotic world situation that could go on for decades and decades.
Yep. Yeah, there's just no doubt about it. And, you know, even if you argued all things being equal and Obama never did back the rebellions in Libya and Syria, still, just the fact that George Bush fought to give Baghdad to the Shia means that X number of Sunnis will never accept that. And we'll fight till one day they have it back. And that could be decades and decades or longer. But that's a lot of blood to be spilled.
And what you have is you have the Israelis who want this to be simply about Shia versus Sunni, and they want to be pro-Sunni. Michael Oren, the former U.S. Israeli ambassador to the U.S., said a few weeks ago that that's what this is about, Sunni versus Shia. And Israel is on the side of the Sunnis over Shia.
Right. And even though the Sunnis are Al-Qaeda, the suicide bombers, the berserkers, the lunatics, and the Shia are Hezbollah, who are like tame pets compared to Al-Qaeda, who don't do a thing except sit on the northern side of the line all day up there. So not only did he say that, but he and Netanyahu he serves must be absolutely out of their minds.
They are. It makes no sense. They are so arrogant that they cannot see the reality of what's in front of them.
Yeah. And by the way, the Google keywords for that are Michael Oren Sunni's Aspen. And I'll be playing that clip. I have a clip of Hillary Clinton I want to play on the other side of this break for you guys, too. But that is absolutely the Israeli thinking. And that's why, in fact, I've been kind of joking darkly, Eric, that it's actually kind of a silver lining that Washington, D.C. is so caught up in their treason for Israel and doing what Israel wants in opposing Assad. It's taken them that much longer to turn their ship around and redirect back toward the Shia and against the Sunnis again. We could have had a full-scale, hardcore, blitzkrieg type of war against the Islamic State going on for the last 2 months. They're still trying to work out their narrative to explain their treason the last 3 years, thanks to Israel. So it's going to slow things down. I don't know. Anyway, man, I wanted to ask you about the politics in Baghdad, too, but that one will have to wait. I talked too much. Thanks so much for talking.
All right. I'd love to come back on soon and talk about the politics of Baghdad.
We will.
They'll probably change by the next time I'm on.
Yeah, it could be tomorrow. All right, thanks. That's Eric Garris, antiwar.com. We'll be right back, y'all. Hey, y'all, Scott here. First, I want to take a second to thank all the show's listeners, sponsors, and supporters for helping make this show what it is. I literally couldn't do it without you. And now I want to tell you about the newest way to help support the show. Whenever you shop at Amazon.com, stop by ScottHorton.org first and just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page. That way, the show will get a kickback from Amazon's end of the sale. It won't cost you an extra cent. And it's not just books. Amazon.com sells just about everything in the world except cars, I think. So whatever you need, they've got it. Just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page at ScottHorton.org or go to ScottHorton.org/Amazon. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here, and I'm so excited about Commodity Discs from CommodityDiscs.com. They're 1 ounce silver pieces with a QR code engraved on the back side. Scan the code with your phone and get the instant spot price. Commodity Discs are paving the way forward for the alternative currency community in America and around the world. The QR code Commodity Disc. Technology has now finally made a real free market silver currency viable. And anyone who donates $100 or more to the Scott Horton Show at ScottHorton.org/donate gets one free. That's CommodityDiscs.com. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. If this nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone, we are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com. Hey, all, Scott Horton here. Coming up this October 18th at Columbia University in New York, the Future Freedom Foundation is hosting a conference titled Stop the Wars on Drugs and Terrorism, featuring Glenn Greenwald, Radley Balco, Jeremy Scahill, Eugene Jarecki, Jonathan Turley, and others. The event is free and open to the public, but registration is required. Just head over to fff.org to sign up. That's the Stop the Wars on Drugs and Terrorism Conference, Saturday, October 18th, 2014 at Columbia University, sponsored by the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org.